Om Jnanadhimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Dhena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasatim Vyasam Tato Jaya Mudiraye. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 12th canto, Chapter 13, The Glories of Srimad Bhagavatam. Suta Goswami said, unto that personality whom Brahma, Varuna, Indra, Rudra, and the Maruts praise by chanting transcendental hymns and reciting the Vedas with all their corollaries, Padakramas and Upanishads, to whom the chanters of the Samaveda always sing, whom the perfected yogis see within their minds, after fixing themselves in trance and absorbing themselves within him, and whose limit can never be found by any demigod or demon, unto that Supreme Personality of Godhead I offer my humble obeisances. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared as Lord Kurma, a tortoise, his back was scratched by the sharp-edged stones lying on massive, whirling Mount Mandara, and this scratching made the Lord sleepy. May you all be protected by the winds caused by the Lord's breathing in that sleepy condition. Ever since that time, even up to the present day, the ocean tides have imitated the Lord's inhaling and exhalation. Inhalation and exhalation by piously coming in and out. Now please hear a summation of the verse length and of each of the Puranas. Then hear the prime subject and purpose of this Bhagavat Purana, the proper method of giving it as a gift, the glories of such gift-giving, and finally the glories of hearing and chanting this literature. The Brahma Purana consists of 10,000 verses, the Padma Purana of 50,000, Sri Vishnu Purana of 23,000, the Shiva Purana of 24,000, and Srimad Bhagavatam of 18,000. The Narada Purana has 25,000 verses, the Markandeya Purana 9,000, the Agni Purana 15,400, the Bhavishya Purana 14,500, the Brahma Vaivarta Purana 18,000, and the Linga Purana 11,000. The Varaha Purana contains 24,000 verses, the Skanda Purana 81,100, the Vamana Purana 10,000, the Kurma Purana 17,000, the Matsya Purana 14,000, the Garuda Purana 19,000, and the Brahmanda Purana 12,000. Thus, the total number of verses in all the Puranas is 400,000. 18,000 of these, once again, belong to the beautiful Bhagavatam. Okay, who can remember how many in each? Who can remember one that has 18,000 just like the... Huh? Besides the Srimad Bhagavatam, which other one has 18,000 verses? Sure. Brahma Vaivarta Purana. Okay. It was to Lord Brahma that the Supreme Personality of God had first revealed the Srimad Bhagavatam in full. At the time, Brahma, frightened by material existence, was sitting on the lotus flower that had grown from the Lord's navel. From beginning to end, the Srimad Bhagavatam is full of narrations that encourage renunciation of material life, as well as nectarian accounts of Lord Krishna's, Lord Hari's transcendental pastimes, which give ecstasy to saintly devotees and demigods. This Bhagavatam is the essence of all Vedanta philosophy because its subject matter is the absolute truth, which, well, non-different from the spirit soul, is the ultimate reality, one without a second. The goal of this literature is exclusive devotional service unto that supreme truth. If on the full moon day of the month of Bhadra, one places Srimad Bhagavatam on a golden throne and gives it as a gift, he will attain the supreme transcendental destination. Do you know when that is? September. It's coming up, so get ready. All other Puranic scriptures shine forth in the assembly of saintly devotees only as long as that great ocean of nectar, Srimad Bhagavatam, is not heard. Srimad Bhagavatam is declared to be the essence of all Vedanta philosophy. One who has felt satisfaction from its nectarian mellow will never be attracted to any other literature. Just as the Ganga is the greatest of all rivers, Lord Achyuta, the supreme among deities, and Lord Shambhu, Shiva, the greatest of Vaishnavas, so Srimad Bhagavatam is the greatest of all Puranas. O Brahmanas, in the same way that the city Kashi is unexcelled among holy places, Srimad Bhagavatam is supreme among all the Puranas. Srimad Bhagavatam is the most spotless, is the spotless Purana. It is most dear to the Vaishnavas because it describes the pure and supreme knowledge of the Paramahamsas. This Bhagavatam reveals the means for becoming free from all material work, together with the processes of transcendental knowledge, renunciation, and devotion. Anyone who seriously tries to understand Srimad Bhagavatam, who properly hears and chants it with devotion, becomes completely liberated. I meditate on that pure and spotless Supreme Absolute Truth, who is free from suffering and death, and who in the beginning personally revealed this incomparable torchlight of knowledge to Brahma. Brahma then spoke it to the sage Narada, who narrated it to Krishna Dvaipayana, Vyas. Srila Vyas, Vyas revealed this Bhagavatam to the greatest of sages, Shukadeva Goswami, and Shukadeva mercifully spoke it to Maharaj Parikshit. We offer our obeisances to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vasudeva, the all-pervading witness, who mercifully explained this science to Brahma when he anxiously desired salvation. I offer my humble obeisances to Sri Shukadeva Goswami, the best of mystic sages and a personal manifestation of the Absolute Truth. He saved Maharaj Parikshit, who was bitten by the snake of material existence. O Lord of Lords, O Master, please grant us pure devotional service at your lotus feet, life after life. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Lord Hari, the congregational chanting of whose holy names destroys all sinful reactions, and the offering of obeisances unto whom relieves all material suffering. End of the 12th canto, end of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah. The last chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam describes the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam as we've just heard. If any of you would like to sit up closer, we very much welcome you. It's a little more comfy up here. Please make yourself comfortable. Come up close. Yes, Gaura Prabhu? That was the last chapter of the 12th canto. It's 12th canto, chapter 13. I read all the verses. There's 23 verses. I just read all the verses. There's 23 verses in the 13th chapter of the 12th canto. And how many verses altogether in the Srimad Bhagavatam? 80. Although if you count them up, you won't find that because some of the prose verses are divided in a certain way, so it comes out to 18,000. In any case, the Shastras describe how the Bhagavatam is the incarnation of Krishna. Krishneshwa dhamo pakate dharma ganadi bisaha kalonashka drishamesha purar narko dhanodita. And that is that just after Lord Krishna departed for his own abode, it's a horrific thing when Krishna leaves. The world's plunged into darkness. It can't withstand living entities here, the earth itself, everyone, after having his association and then him leaving, cannot tolerate. So, to fill that void, immediately upon his departure, the Srimad Bhagavatam appears. And those who take shelter of the Srimad Bhagavatam will never be bereft of the association of Lord Krishna. Because idam bhagavatam nama puranam brahma samhitam uttama shloka charitam chakara bhagavan rishi nirsheya shaya lokasya dhamdam swastayanam mahat. Srimad Bhagavatam is directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. It's full of all knowledge and it's all perfect, all blissful. And also, Shastra describes how the book itself is an incarnation of the Supreme Lord Hari. Just as we go to the temple to worship the deity and we see the form of the deity in its entirety, we see the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radhakir Chor Gopinath. And then we can see his ankles, his waist, his torso, his arms, his beautiful face, his crown on his head. So similarly, the Srimad Bhagavatam is also a physical manifestation of the Lord's form. So the first canto, first second canto are his lotus feet. And the 12th canto is his crown. 10th canto is the smiling face of the Lord. Sometimes people ask when we go to distribute Srimad Bhagavatams whether they can just take one book. Because that's the way they try to get out of it. Because living entities are trying to get out of it since time immemorial. Krishna comes and asks for some service and he says, yeah, not right now. Later. I'm a little busy now. I have my own interests. And so when we go as representatives of the Supreme Personality of Godhead door to door, we mustn't be surprised if somebody says, oh, not right now, later, I don't have room, I don't have time, why don't you give it to somebody else who will read it, and so forth. And also, to get out of taking the whole Bhagavatam, the whole manifestation, someone says, just give me one volume. Of course, that's also magnanimous. But we tell people, which is true, that we can't break up the sets, because to say it's a deity, the whole thing's a deity, so it's not possible to break it up. Selling Srimad Bhagavatams follows the four laws of book distribution. Of course, your sadhana must be strong. And if those who have a love for the Srimad Bhagavatam and are reading it regularly, I notice this, have a way of explaining it with deep conviction because they're reading it regularly and Krishna gives them the intelligence. So it's highly recommended that one study the Srimad Bhagavatam very carefully and worship that book because it is the spotless Purana that gives one all perfection. And then there's getting Srimad Bhagavatams because one might think, what's the use of carrying a Bhagavatam with me? No one will take it anyway. But that's a fallacy in logic because if you don't take it, they can't take it. And if you bring Bhagavatams, you'd be surprised that people will take them, especially if you bring it up. And that comes to the third law of book distribution, and that's what? Thank you. The more you show, the more you sell. The more you show, the more you sell. And one of the ways of showing is to bring it up, talk to people about it, and also have it available and visible. So recently, one of some devotees went to distribute books on a college campus near our temple. One of the devotees insisted, take a set of Bhagavatams with you. And the devotee said, oh, okay. Usually we just walk around. But so they took the set of Bhagavatams, they set it down with their other books. And just as they were distributing, a professor came up and began speaking to them. And one of the devotees mentioned the Bhagavatams. She said, yes, I'll take it. And so you never know. One thing is if you bring it and you make it available and you're thinking about making Bhagavatam available, then Krishna will send people that will take the Srimad Bhagavatam. And you have to organize because it's not easy to carry Srimad Bhagavatam around. I noticed that we need some wheelie bags. Don't you have wheelie bags? It's called JanSport. Do you remember the particular model? We have an authorized model that comes through the disciplic succession because it comes through Bhrigupati Prabhu, the great venerable sage who lives on the west coast of California. By his austerity alone, that state is being held from being consumed by the ocean. He's so powerful, that sage, Bhrigupati Prabhu. So many books he distributes, so fixed in his sadhana. And he's authorized this particular book bag that goes on wheels. It's called a JanSport, and we'll get you the particular model. And it's also eternal. It never wears out. Or if it does wear out, the company replaces it for free. I think it's because they appreciate book distribution so much. Because Brigapati Prabhu has replaced his about 8 times because it wears out so much. And they just give you a new one when it runs out. So there's nothing to lose and all to gain. And I bring this up because Bhagavatams are heavy and you have to carry books here, there, and everywhere. For Bhagavatam, you need a little more robust kind of a wheelie with the big wheels on it. Don't go off and buy the cheapest thing you find. It'll break on you somewhere. Invest in the best possible technology so you can wheel around the Bhagavatam and the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And when devotees go door to door to sell Bhagavatams, the way in which they're mostly successful is they pick neighborhoods that where there are good school districts because they know that there are upscale families there. And admittedly, the biggest recipients for the Bhagavatam are Indians. And someone may say, well, how is that? And my realization is that it's Krishna's arrangement. Just as it's Krishna's arrangement right now that 65% of the motels are owned and run by Gujaratis, who are perhaps the most pious people on the planet, so that we can place Bhagavad Gita's in all the motels. That's Lord Chaitanya's arrangement. And if one can't see that, then one's not looking very carefully. And in a similar way, one may also notice that there are Indians in all the technologically advanced countries who are doing IT work and other kinds of work. And one might ask, why is that? Why are they there? Well, the answer is very simple, so they can take a set of Srimad Bhagavatams. Because they came to us. And Lord Chaitanya makes these arrangements. In fact, all these cities, he lines up houses and he lines up apartment buildings, and they're all in a row so that we can go down each one and mark them off our list and make sure we visit each door. Otherwise, it'd be a lot more difficult to find people if they're spread out all over the country. And that's why there are cities. And that's why there are Indians in the cities right now. Fact is, anybody can take Srimad Bhagavatam, but the lion's share are being purchased by Indians. Therefore, I notice the biggest success is when devotees calculate this. They find out where the concentration of Indians are in a good school district. And then they go around door to door. Sri Krishna Purushottam will knock on a door and he'll hold one volume of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Of course, we have the spiritual battering ram. He'll have that behind him, the whole case. Just like when the police come and they break down your door, they bring this huge battering ram, bang! So Bhagavatam's like that. Comes crashing in. But he brings one book with him, 7th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, about the pastimes of Lord Nrsimhadev. And the devotees who go to do Srimad Bhagavatam sets knock on doors. And then when they find families that are open and friendly, they give a presentation. They show the book, they show the pictures, they explain that all the stories are here. Oftentimes people say, oh, I already have Bhagavad Gita. Because people are generally concentrated elsewhere. They're thinking about material advancement, and they're thinking about Java and all these other languages. Not Sanskrit and not Bhagavatam. We're thinking about everything else. So they'll say, I already have Bhagavad Gita. And the devotees say, oh, this isn't Bhagavad Gita, actually. These Bhagavad Gita gives the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, but this explicates it in all the stories. And the devotees also have a flip book that tell the very basic stories and lessons of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And one of the most successful ways of presenting Bhagavatam when one goes around door to door to families is to explain how the children get so much from the Bhagavatam that they may listen to the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita and appreciate just a tiny bit, but when they hear the stories, what kind of stories are there in Srimad Bhagavatam? would you say?
Thrilling.
But which ones are there?
Dhruva Maharaj.
Dhruva Maharaj. That's something kids can relate to. A little kid who runs away from home at 5 years old because he's angry at his father. And that's a compelling story. What other story? Prahlad Maharaj. Another gripping story. What else?
Gajendra.
Gajendra's pastimes. Elephant who gets caught by a crocodile and has a big crisis and fights with the crocodile and then is saved by Lord Vishnu. What else? What? Ajamil. Ajamil who's captured by the Yamadutas and then is freed by the Vishnu Dutas and goes back to Godhead then?
The sons of Daksha.
The Prachetas. The sons of Daksha with the Vyavalikas and the... it's two sets of sons, 10,000 sons and then 1,000 sons, and they get converted by Narada Muni and they go off and take renunciation and Daksha becomes angry. So there are all these stories that are extremely interesting. And one of the ways that devotees talk to families is about how when you have the Bhagavatam in your home and you read it to your kids, they'll start to pick up the values of the Bhagavatam. And it's true. And also, we talk about how just having the Bhagavatam in your home, according to scripture, is a pious act. And in the Nectar Devotion, you'll notice that Rupa Goswami quotes a verse that says that those who respect and keep Vaishnava literatures in their home are worshipable even by the demigods. Their homes become a place of pilgrimage by keeping the Bhagavatam inside. Just like in Canada, they have these airplanes that fly over that infrared photography, and they can tell which houses have a little more too much heat in them because it means they're growing marijuana. So in the same way, the demigods have this vision, infrared vision. They can see which homes have the Bhagavatams in them, and they are doing puja there. And I was presenting Bhagavatam when I was in Washington, D.C. once, and I was talking about the importance of having it in the home because I said it emanates this powerful spiritual energy, and it's important for the kids. And after my talk, and incidentally that day, and during the Sunday program, we sold about 60 sets of Bhagavatams. And then afterwards, there was a young man who came up to me. He's about 18 years old. And he said, "I'd like to tell you my story." And he said that when he was young, actually grew up in a devotee family, and they had a set of Bhagavatams just outside his room. So every time he entered his room, he'd notice the picture on the first canto. And then he said, "When I got into my teens, I became bad." He said, "Actually, I became very bad." And he started taking heavy drugs. And then he had an overdose. And he died. The heart stopped. And he had an out-of-body experience. They were trying to revive him, get his heart started again. And while he was in that state, he said he had a very deep dream where he was dying and he was going away from his body, but then suddenly he saw the cover of the Srimad Bhagavatam that had always been there outside his room when he was a child. And then he became full of hope and he came back into consciousness.
Wow.
And as soon as he came back, then he said, "I'm going to dedicate my life to Krishna consciousness," after having completely rejected it. And he said, "The Bhagavatam saved me." He said, "So what you were saying in there is actually true. I'm a personal test. I can give my personal testimonial that this is true." So going into homes to present Bhagavatam requires a little patience, because when we sell Bhagavad Gitas and so forth, it all takes place within 1 to 5 minutes. And then you know very quickly what's going to happen. When devotees go to do Bhagavatams, they focus on distributing Bhagavatams. And they come into the house. And sometimes it takes an hour or more to present the Bhagavatam. One of the very effective ways is with the flip book that we have in ISV. Do you have that? Okay. But that's something we can make available to everybody. And the devotees oftentimes interest the kids in the family, because the kids will come in and they show them the flip book and they can start going through it, the various stories. It's one of the number one ways that people buy Bhagavatams, is because they understand that it's important for their children. So that's something that you can focus on when you go to do the Bhagavatams. And also, devotees point out the various subject matters of the Srimad Bhagavatam. There, maybe you can name a few.
Creation
is there. It talks about creation because it's not well known in general society what creation is. People are generally aware that there's an idea of creationism, and then there's also an idea of evolution. And not many people have a detailed account of creation, but the Srimad Bhagavatam does. What else? The various elements, Sankhya philosophy?
Scientific developments.
Yes, scientific explanation of the development of the baby within the womb. The various progressive stages, and also the consciousness, developmental consciousness of the baby in the womb. That's very interesting, and people pick up on that. Anything else? What?
Personal journey.
Personal journeys of various...
Pingala.
Transformations. Yes, Ajamil.
Military warfare.
Military warfare. Yes. Politics.
Traveling to other planets.
Huh? Ideal family life.
How to calculate time
by the atom.
Transcendental knowledge
and disciplic succession. And so the devotees who explain these various categories of knowledge capture people's intelligence, and they appreciate. And generally they'll bring the set of Bhagavatams in, and it helps if they take out some of the books and they display them while they're there. Now, one of the ways in which very recently we've discovered presenting Srimad Bhagavatam in an effective way is that we've formed a group called Go Matsya. What's Matsya Dev famous for? Saving the Vedas, right. So, we have a saying, that, and that is, the best preservation is mass distribution. So oftentimes, people from India appreciate the culture, and they also might lament the fact that the culture is being lost. In fact, Mukunda Datta, an ISKCON devotee, great sadhu, pure devotee, and also a pundit, and great musician, studied scriptural preservation, and he reports how tens of thousands of original scriptures are lost every year in India because they deteriorate. And not only that, the message becomes obscured. In the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna explains to Uddhava how the message of the Vedas is lost over time because of the perversion of the message. Because of the effects of the three modes of material nature, people who are not sincerely following disciplic succession present it in a distorted way, and then it becomes lost, potency becomes lost. So there are many ways in which the Vedas can become lost, and we understand from the Bhagavatam also how Matsya came at the time of dissolution, and he kept the Vedas up on a boat. So Matsya is famous for that. So many years ago in ISKCON, there was a project funded by the BBT called the Matsya Project, where devotees were going around and photographing old scriptures. They were being preserved on microfiche, which many of you have no idea. Except for Rupanuga in the back. Thank you, Rupanuga. That was pre-computer. And that idea was to save the Vedas that are available. And this is a very compelling presentation to many people when you begin by talking about the culture of
the Vedas and how important it is to the world and how it's being lost and obscured. And then you present that we have an organization called Gomatsya. And you can join the organization and be part of the preservation project. And the preservation project is, we do two things. We do education in Srimad Bhagavatam, so young people, old people, everyone can imbibe the Bhagavatam. They can learn the whole thing. And also mass distribution of the physical copies and electronic copies all over the world, because the more it's distributed, the more it's preserved, because when it's spread here, there, and everywhere, the likelihood of it being carried on gets higher. And when we present this message, many people become interested. They say, I'd like to be a part of that. I think that's a very good idea. And part of this is we ask people to enroll in Matsya. They can become a part of it. So what does that mean when you become a member of Gomatsya? It means that you can become a representative and you can help to distribute the Srimad Bhagavatam. And of course that includes them taking a set of Bhagavatams for themselves. That's obviously included. So they'll take a set of Bhagavatams just incidentally because they're joining Gomatsya. And then as a member of Gomatsya, you can go out and find other people who are interested. So just recently there was a woman who was very excited about the idea when one of our devotees presented it, and immediately signed up for Gomatsya. She took her own set of Bhagavatams, gave $500, and then she had seven friends that she recommended. So this idea came because we were finding that going around all the neighborhoods in Silicon Valley over the last 5 years and distributing Bhagavatam sets, a lot of people have them now. So we've distributed thousands of sets. So now we were like, how to expand from there? And we realized that when your cold market's gone, you have to look at your warm market, to use technical sales jargon. And where is that? It's in the people themselves who already have the Bhagavatam or appreciate the Bhagavatam or buying it. So normally in sales what happens is one person buys your product and appreciates it, and then you ask them for referrals from their acquaintances and relatives. And this is very effective, so much so that people who like it, they'll personally call those people and say, I'd like you to take one of these. I took it. You should too. And I'm going to send these people over. And that's the idea behind Gomatsya also. Everyone has a set of Bhagavatams. As Shraddha Devi Dasi was pointing out in her presentation the other day at Corporate Sankirtan, each person has a warm market. That means a connection, a personal connection with at least 250 people. So people who take the Bhagavatam are likely to have a network of friends who will also be interested. So we start with that presentation talking about preserving the Srimad Bhagavatam and how mass distribution and education in Bhagavatam is the most important. And incidentally, you should also have a set of Bhagavatams, but also please introduce us to all your friends who would also like to take a set of Bhagavatams. And they'll recommend this person, that person, and give you several references. From there you can expand. One of the other ways in which the Bhagavatam distribution has been greatly stimulated is by the installation process. That means when we offer a set of Bhagavatams, we also offer a free installation, which means that the devotees go to their house, or if they're already in their house showing the Bhagavatam, then once they accept the Bhagavatam in their home, the devotees do an installation, which is comprised of setting up the books. If there are flowers, you can decorate it. And then offering an artik. And then we take down the first volume of the Bhagavatam and we pass it around with the family so everyone can read at least one paragraph. And then we announce that the Bhagavatam has been duly and officially installed in their house. And then there are programs at which they can attend to find out more about the Bhagavatam and so forth. And of course, the Gomatsya project is a fairly recent development. They can also join the Gomatsya program. So these are a few basic ideas, but the principle always is the most transportable. That is, if you take the basic principle, that is, talk about the Bhagavatam and bring the Bhagavatam with you when you go out to present to people, then you'll find that there are people who are interested and they'll take it. And you simply have to speak about it directly, also mention how good it is for their children, and bring up about the preservation and enroll them in Gomatsya so that they can also be a part of saving the Vedas. And when they feel that part of that bigger cause, they'll become very enthusiastic about helping with the Bhagavatam. And we have a card that has some basic tips about distributing Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, do any of you have your cards? May I see one of yours? Oh, thank you. We call this program Get Sets and Go. A couple other points that I'll just mention before we start a discussion, that when talking to Indians, converse in your native language. If you find somebody that speaks Telugu, then start speaking in that language. It immediately makes a strong connection. Also, glorify regional saints. If you know people, if you're meeting somebody from Punjab, then it's Guru Nanak. If you meet people from other areas where you know there are particular saints that are revered, then you talk about them. That also endears people. And the obvious point about showing it to ripe fruits, because you may go through several houses until you find somebody who's very ripe. And one of the ways we notice that people are ripe fruits is they invite you in. Some people are so pious, when they see you outside the door, they'll just say, okay, come on in. And that's always a big mistake. Okay, so make a simple presentation. And if you make a simple presentation and wait to see their response, whether they're ripe fruit or unripe fruit, that will give you an indication whether to keep going. And then stick to the main points. So they've especially noted the appearance of Srimad Bhagavatam, like Narada meets Vyasadeva, set the scene with Parikshit and Shukadeva Goswami. That's also a compelling story of the Bhagavatam, that Parikshit gave up his kingdom and sat down on the Ganga to hear what to do at the time of death. And of course, all of us are in the same predicament. We just don't think about it very much. And simplify complex philosophy. So I mentioned many of the other points. The other ones are that when engaging them, asking for the donation for the Bhagavatam, emphasize it comes in a set. People will ask you to break it up. And note that it's a spiritual investment. This is something that's important, because people spend money here, there, and everywhere on games and entertainment, and that's not really an investment. That's sort of an expenditure. But this is a spiritual investment. And if you bring that point up, it catches. And the other thing that's really helpful at a practical level is to have various payment plans available. Because if you offer that people can buy on installments, then they can take the books right away, then it's a lot easier for them to make the decision to buy the Bhagavatams. How much do you sell them for here in Canada? 400? 500?
379.
That's it?
That's it.
Are we crazy or what? 379. So 379, that's really inexpensive. And there are now there are applications that you can take on your phone that you can find out from ISV that do the time payments for you. They slide their card and then it divides up the payment, and you don't have to do a lot of extra work. Sometimes devotees leave the set with people. They want to think about it. That's effective about 75% of the time, maybe 80% of the time. People say, we'll think it over, and we'll just leave the set with them, and you get back to us. And then they decide, okay, we'll take it. And, you know, a few days later or a week later, they'll take it. But one of the main points is to get the Bhagavatam in there and start talking about it and see what happens. Because once it's there, it becomes a force that is not hard to, that is very difficult to deny. Those are the main points, and now we'll take a few questions about Bhagavatam sets. Yes? Okay, go ahead and I'll repeat what you're asking.
I remember when Australia was...
Gaura Prabhu was remembering when Australia was selling sets.
They even had a newsletter called Selling the Full Set.
They had a newsletter called Selling the Full Set.
And, yes, so when I visited San Diego...
When he visited San Diego in 1992,
I remember seeing that Mahatma Prabhu was working on, I can't remember the technical name, but encyclopedias have like an auxiliary book which breaks down the many topics of the encyclopedia into kind of a condensed form. So why? As an example. So that would be there in a list, you know, alphabetical order. It's kind of like an index. I didn't fully understand exactly what it was, but I thought it was a great marketing idea for promoting, showing how relevant the Bhagavatam is. And kind of like with the idea of it being a spiritual encyclopedia, but that, you know, if you want to look up a topic, you know, you can get everything you need on agriculture or sustainability or human, you know, how to have better relationships. So I don't know if you know what I'm referring to or not.
Yeah. Okay. And it's sort of the idea that I was presenting now, that they have a flip book and it goes through topically and things like that. But it was a little more comprehensive what they were doing in Australia and also what Mahatma Prabhu was doing. And they were aiming more towards a broader audience. And that's the idea, is to show people the relevance of it. Yeah.
It's like you have every home should have an Encyclopedia Britannica, but then you want to have the Bhagavatam Encyclopedia to give people the spiritual perspective on everything that they're studying in university.
Yeah.
Prabhu, you were mentioning about the people, when they open the door, they'll ask you to come inside. And I generally find that's the most difficult thing to do, especially when you go out. How do you get people to kind of open up so that they want the devotees to come?
No, you don't get them to. They just do. I mean, some people are like that. You open the door and they'll let you in. And it's just a certain kind of person, very ripe fruit. And I notice that some of the devotees are very, they'll sort of subtly suggest that they should come in. But generally, most people don't want you to come in because they understand once you come in, there's a bigger obligation. But some people's culture is such that if they don't invite you in, they'll feel remiss. And so it's just natural. Open the door and they say, oh, please, they see spiritual people outside, so they say, okay, we have to let them in or we'll make an offense. That's how pious they are, so they feel like, come in. And it's not just Indians. Also, when I went door-to-door in Italy, there were lots of people, because they're very pious, they see you, they come in, And then so once you go in, there's more of a opportunity to present. But you can present at the doorway also, and then people might become interested. And as I mentioned, devotees often carry one volume so they can show this is what we have. This is a sample of the Bhagavatam, so they can start looking at it. And if they have a little bit of interest and you say, yeah, we can show you the whole thing, you know, we have it here, we can bring it in. This Trojan horse. And the Trojan horse comes in and you start taking out the books and then the whole thing expands. That's what Krishna does in people's lives. He's like, yeah, I just went three steps of land. The next thing, thanks, you know, boom. So Lord Hari takes away everything, all one's miseries.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I had a question about the Gomatsya project that you're mentioning. Do you tell the people you're meeting, do you tell them that, or is there something that part of their donation for the set goes towards this Gomatsya project, which is actually going on?
Well, now it's a very new program, but it's very well received so far. And when we start off with that, we say, hi, we're doing a project called Go Matsya. Matsya Save the Vedas, and also it's very much needed in human society to save the culture of the Vedas. And the best preservation is by mass distribution and by education. And that's what we're doing, mass distribution and education. And we know that you already know all about this. And therefore, we're asking you to become a member of Go Matsya. You might be interested in helping preserve the Vedas. Well, what do we have to do? Well, just sign up, be a part of it. And, you know, we have these sets of Bhagavatams, and we're finding that people give twice as much because they really like the idea of the project. And along with it comes the set of Bhagavatams. So say, you know, Bhagavatams were selling for $250, and then you can say, sign up for Go Matsya. We don't have a set price for it, but people generally, you know, to be a member of Go Matsya, you buy a set of Bhagavatams, but they generally give twice as much to be a member of Go Matsya. And then they're excited to also get their friends involved. And that's the reason that we started it, is to start a referral program. Because you say, we're still developing it, but we're making various levels that they can achieve. Say if they sign up one other friend, then they achieve first level. And then after that, you can sign up 5 friends, 10 friends. It's kind of multi-level marketing. We've tried this before, multi-level marketing. We set up a whole scheme online and everything like that. But we didn't quite have the right teeth for it. But we've been monkeying around with it for a while. And we noticed Bhaktivinoda Thakur invented it before Amway did anyway. A lot of people each doing a little bit and getting their networks involved. And we feel that this will be a very huge program all over the world. It's working extremely well at ISV, just in our initial stages. And the devotees in England are very interested in it. And I'm going there to talk about it very soon and implement it there, because there are a lot of people who are waiting for Bhagavatam sets there and can pass it on to others. 1, 2.
You mentioned yesterday while distributing small books or Bhagavad Gita, we should focus more on building a nice relationship, like leaving a good impression rather than getting money. So in this case, how liberal can we when we're distributing Bhagavatam sets?
How do you leave a good impression?
How much liberal you can be in terms of the money, the Lakshmi?
Liberal, you mean leaving them? We generally, we don't give away Bhagavatam sets for less. Because if somebody's interested, that, you know, it's very rare that we'll go below 250. That's already a very cut rate anyway. And generally people are happy to give $250. And practically every home where devotees go talk about Bhagavatams, if people are interested in engaging in that conversation and it goes further, then there's always a good impression at the end. We have hundreds of videos of devotees inside the house doing the installation programs, the whole family chanting. We have visual evidence of people crying when they get the Bhagavatam in their home, things like that. It's a love fest. Would you use the microphone, please?
The example of the family who took the Bhagavatam set, who were even vegetarian, and you want to tell that one?
Yeah, well, one of our devotees in our congregation is now one of the Bhagavatam distributors, was non-vegetarian. Devotees came by, presented the Bhagavatam. He got the Bhagavatam, put it in his house, and just by its presence there, he started feeling the effect. And he started reading a little bit, and then he said one night at dinner, he was eating and basically, I don't know what word to use. He regurgitated, he vomited during dinner. He couldn't eat meat anymore. It just stopped suddenly. And then he started chanting Hare Krishna, and he started chanting 16 rounds, and then he came to the temple. He brought his family to the temple. And he's going to take vows, and he's dedicated to it. So Bhagavatam has a big effect on people's lives. We've noticed for years, anyone who's done Bhagavatam projects, and there have been several over the years, devotees making inroads into selling sets of Bhagavatams in various ways. Some people have been very dedicated, have actually, one devotee in Australia took the full course about how to sell Encyclopedia Britannica and so forth, just to find out how to do it. Some of the devotees in the Bay Area many, many years ago were studying the same things and coming up with ideas. So it's something that's been ongoing. Yes, Gaur.
Yes, you were mentioning that by being a member of Gomatsya, it sounded like...
Oh, would you like to become a member of Gomatsya? You sound kind of interested.
I already have a full set of tonight.
I know you have a full set, and we appreciate that you're one of the early joiners of the Gomatsya organization, even before you knew it existed. And that's why we approached you, because you have a deeper understanding of this than most people in the world. And what we're interested in doing is mass distribution as a way of preservation. And so we need people like you, who we call mavens. In the book, The Tipping Point, which talks about marketing trends, there's an expression by the author, mavens are those... He found that sociologically there are certain kinds of people that have a great influence on a lot of people.
Mavens.
Yeah, he called them mavens. It was part of his description of the sociological phenomenon, that the way that trends get started, there are certain people who have a lot of influence. There are little centers of influence in certain cities, and you can trace it back to certain people where trends come from. And they happen to be connected. They know everyone, everything, and they pass things on. And because of those kinds of people getting involved in a particular thing, then it tends to spread very quickly. And so, Gaura Prabhu, what's it going to take for us to get you as a member of Matsya today?
I was thinking Facebook could be a great way to promote it.
That's what I was thinking too.
No, my question was, when you became a member of Gomatsya, you were saying that it's twice as much as what one would pay for a Bhagavatam.
No, I was saying people generally give twice as much because they like the idea so much. There's a difference between selling a set of Bhagavatams and it's tit for tat. It's like, how much is it? Is this much? Okay, there you go. Sometimes people give more for that too. They feel really appreciative. But with this, you're not actually selling them a set of Bhagavatams. You're enrolling them as a person who's going to sell the Bhagavatams. And as a part of that, they just naturally get a set for themselves. And they like the idea, the concept so much that they give more. That's been our experience so far.
There's a comment on Facebook from Yashoda Mahindasi. She said, the first time in doing books, I sold a set to a Muslim. Krishna's mercy.
Jai! So we can go back to that apartment complex we were at yesterday. And start wheeling big carts of Bhagavatams down the hallway. Hey, you know, in Urdu, if you present to people nicely, you'll find pious people will take. But it's Chaitanya Charitamrita also. We had done Bhagavatams for some time at ISV, and then we decided, let's sell Chaitanya Charitamrita sets. Because who, frankly, sells sets of Chaitanya Charitamrita? It's pretty rare in the world. And so the devotees were saying, how do you do it? It's like the way you do everything else. Take them out with you and just show them. And I think I showed a picture of Shraddha Devi Dasi with that Muslim man from Morocco. And he's all smiling and like, yeah, I got a set of Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's the golden avatar. Jivas will take if you present. And Lord Chaitanya also gets involved. He'll arrange for people. So you have to take them out and show them and sort of assume the sale that there are people out there that will take. And if you do that, then Krishna will start giving you connections, and you'll find people who will take. Anything else? Okay, so we also want to see if there's any follow-up questions from the... We've had a few days of disseminating information and also going out together on book distribution. Perhaps there are some reflections or questions that came up for you, either from the presentations or from the live demonstrations that we had yesterday and the experience that you want to clarify. Yes?
Can I ask a question?
You may, but you have to use a microphone, otherwise it doesn't qualify as Brihat Madanga.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Can I ask a question on set distribution?
Yes, you may. You just have to explain it. One thing is, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, if you notice carefully, is a garland of verses from the Bhagavatam. The main pramanam of the Chaitanya Charitamrita is the Bhagavatam. It's one a choice verse after another strung together in threads. So you have to bring people through. Bhagavad Gita, explain what that is. What is the Bhagavatam in relationship to the Gita? And here's what the Chaitanya Charitamrita is in relationship to the Bhagavatam. And also that it's, as Prabhupada put it, it's a postgraduate study of the philosophy. And also bringing out the unique quality of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, how he's the golden avatar who went barefoot from town to town teaching people the system of bhakti yoga and how he simplified it so that everybody could take it everywhere. So this, although is a postgraduate study, in another way, it's paradoxically, it's an entry level as well. And if you glorify Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and talk about the way in which he brought the Yuga Dharma to the world and so forth, just the basic principles you already know, and you just straightforwardly present. As Prabhupada said, if you just present these books on their own merit, people will take. And just fine, the more straightforward you are, the more potency you'll feel too, because you just, like, okay, go straightforward and present it. And it's things you've already known and read. And actually, that gives you an opportunity from all the things that you've been studying for so long and imbibing by your sincere studies, it gives you an opportunity to bring them out and offer them to somebody else, and then they grow in your consciousness and your life. So just take what you already have and know about Chaitanya Charitamrita and present it to others. Just tell them about it. The reason people take things is because other people recommend them to them. And if you come with a strong recommendation and they happen to like you, they'll take it. So it's actually really simple. You don't have to make it too complicated. The book is there. Living entities like books. And if you take them around and just present them, a certain percentage will take anyway. They're just sitting out there waiting. And then the higher percentages come because you'll get realization about how to refine your approach in various ways by making a few mistakes. And then after doing that, you'll become expert. And then you'll be able to put together a string of successes of selling Bhagavatams and Chaitanya Charitamritas. Yes?
You were taking apartments, like the string of kind of picking your verses very carefully. I remember a few years ago, I had a very intense desire to distribute Chaitanya Charita on the street, and it was actually on Boxing Day. And I met this Filipino lady from Calgary, and we started talking about the Srimad Bhagavatam, and she kept saying like she knew it, she had it. So I kind of just built upon that, and I kind of like just picked a few key verses and just kind of built upon the Srimad Bhagavatam. So what I really like to do is kind of pair the SD and the CC, kind of make it a dual combo. So you can always, you know, kind of combine them, and then building upon that relationship and continue to grow, and then hopefully she'll pick up more books and recommend. And that's actually what happened.
Yeah, it's mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita itself that the combination of the two is a kind of ambrosia. When you put the Chaitanya Charitamrita and the Bhagavatam together, you have nectar and then you have camphor added to it. It becomes ambrosia. And so, yes, you can present like that. These two books go together. Feel free. Yes?
I have a question about follow-ups. You know, like when we meet people on the street, we have street festivals, we have... and we get their contact information. So I would like to really learn how your ISV and other devotees are doing the follow-up, because that's something which I find very challenging too, because I'm like so caught up in trying to set up all these different festivals and the book stuff. So who is doing, like, how do you get the follow-up technique?
Devotees who have studied it minutely say that the highest success comes from personal follow-up. And this is true in any kind of endeavor. Oftentimes people think we'll just automate the whole process. But the more you automate it, the less effective it is. Although it is important to automate it as well. But the more you can personally follow up with people that you meet and make contact and make friends with them, the more that you'll have long-term success. Just like everyone knows in the temple, when you make personal friendships with people, contacts, and you become mentors and friends and helpers, then they'll gradually become faithful and part of the family. And they'll be able to withstand the various changes that take place in their life. So one devotee named Anakadundubi Prabhu in Italy has been meticulous about following up. And he keeps lists. And he told me that the, and all the studies he's done about follow-up, and he's even made reports to the GBC and things like that, he's found that the more that you personally follow up with the people you meet, the more effective it is. Having said that, it's important to have ways in which to capture the information and keep it carefully. And it's also a good idea at the very beginning level to have a drip system. So when you meet people, there's a way that they can get a regular reminder that they met you. So one of the programs that we do at ISV, we have a regular contact with people. So say they buy a Bhagavatam set and then they get signed up to what we call Sound Bhakti Pulse. And it's a 6-minute class that comes out about every week. And they get that in their mailbox and it's a little 6-minute Bhagavatam class. So they get those on a regular basis and some other contacts that they sign up for. So you can put people in a drip system and you may forget about them, but they won't forget about you because they're regularly getting things. And successful organizations will take names and then keep people on a drip system perpetually until they either move away and you lose their address or they say stop sending. They'll keep doing. Because you never know, over 5 years, 10 years, people on the drip system, then it's like, thanks for remembering me all this time and the circumstances and their life change and they come. And if you add all that up with all the contacts you're making, it has an effect. One way you can do is to send out a newsletter. Simple way too is to send postcards. as people really notice those, because so many people get too many emails. So if you send a physical postcard on a regular basis, people will keep it, especially if it's beautiful and has a nice message on it. People remember you. There's a lot of ways to do a drip system, but that's an important way of entry level of following up with people. And then having some idea of how to educate them on a sliding scale. There are various classes that they can enroll in if they're interested and come and be part of a class that suits them. If you just invite everybody to one program, for instance, it's everyone come to the Sunday program, they may not stick because they might walk in the door and say, what? They couldn't relate to it. But if you find ways to fill the gaps so that people can relate, you can bring them along according to the level they're at, then you can gradually encourage growth. We have done in neighborhoods where we've sold Bhagavatam sets, then rented a small community hall that comes along with these apartment buildings. So say we've gone to a certain neighborhood, and then afterwards we invite everybody to a program where they can learn more about how to read Bhagavatam. And those have been really successful, because people remember that for many, many years, that they got invited to that. There's prasadam, there's explanation of the Bhagavatam, how to read it, what's in it, and stuff like that. So those are some things you can do. Yes, Gaura?
Yes, two thoughts came to my mind. One of the devotees that I went out with yesterday said, what do you say to people? This is a two-part question. What do you say to people when they say, is this some kind of religion? You know, what religion is this? That's one part of the question.
So one thing that I find is oftentimes people, it depends on their tone of voice when they ask it. They say, is this religion? And one answer that I've found to be successful is to say, this completely rejects all religious activity that is materially motivated. And it propounds the highest truth, which is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. This beautiful Bhagavatam, compiled by the great sage Śrīla Vyāsadeva, is sufficient in itself for God-realization. As soon as one attentively and submissively hears the Bhagavatam, he becomes attached to the Supreme Lord, who won't leave his heart. So that one line, that this completely rejects all religious activity that is materially motivated, is right from the Bhagavatam. It's very powerful, because what a lot of people are asking when they ask about, is this religion? They want to know, is this a cheating religion? Is this a pretentious religion? Is this something where you're going to condescend to me? Is it, this completely rejects all religious activities that are materially motivated. And then they kind of, oh, that fulfills my inquiry. So you can use that.
Great. Can't get more direct than that. And also regarding follow-up, I've always had a little bit of an issue. You know, you meet a really sweet person, they've taken a book, and you don't want them just to be one of the millions of people who've gotten books, and then they just, you know, you never see them again. So, you know, one way could be, you know, let's exchange contact information, or, you know, we have festivals. I'd like to keep you in touch. You know, we have some festivals or some special seminars. I'm wondering what, because people will be a little bit on the defensive. They say, well, you know, I'd like to have your contact information. Like,
not so much. We did it yesterday. There were a lot of people gave us their contact information.
What
we found.
Did you say exactly?
Well, like with Frank, we talked to him. We found that he was a very open person. He was very happy we were there. Gave a donation. Took the book, and we said, would you like to hear about programs that we have so you can attend if you'd like to? And he said, yeah, I'd like to. I said, just give your email. Who took his email? And Narharidev, who took his email address, put him on the list. So we find that it's not that big a stretch for people to do that. And as I was saying, at the very least, there should be a drip system designed so they're getting some unique and compelling kind of information, either written or in a video or in a recording, and also invited to appropriate programs. Because if you just invite them to Janmashtami and things like that, you should have a list of classes that they can come to that are introductory level and that suit the particular person that you meet. How much time do we have left? Okay, so I have to show this PowerPoint really quick because Mathura Prasad Prabhu set up the projector. And if I don't show it, I don't know how he'll feel. This is just a short course in communications because this is a basic principle you can apply everywhere and it'll really help you on your book distribution. Okay? Everyone go, yes! Okay, so communications number one, 101. There are principles and techniques. So here are some principles. Speak to the soul. When you're speaking to people, remember you're talking to a soul. And if you do that, you'll make a you'll have a unique vision when you're talking to them that this person is not just a body, but they're a soul. And it tends to touch them more deeply. One who systematically sees all living entities as spiritual sparks and quality one with the Lord becomes a true knower of things. What then can be illusion or anxiety for him? This is the spirit of this principle, to remember this. And you may say, well, I'm not an uttamadhikari, I don't see like that. But the point is, and it's made right in the verse itself, anupashyati means to follow in the footsteps of the great souls. Anu means to follow, and pashyati means to see. And it's translated here as systematically, one who systematically sees all living entities. So when you're talking to people, keep this vision that you're talking to a spiritual soul and not just a body. And it will keep you free from illusion and anxiety when you're out distributing, because you'll remember that. Next thing is remember that purity is the force in distributing books. And there's no replacement for that. And when we read the Bhagavatam, we find in the fourth canto about how when a person who is pure speaks, the vibration of his or her voice touches Krishna's lotus feet. And did you know that on Krishna's lotus feet there are saffron particles? Say yes.
Yes.
Yes. So you knew that. So now the vibration mixes with those particles, and now it has a unique quality. And that's why when a pure devotee speaks, one is moved in a particular way. So becoming pure is the most important technique of all, principle, actually. This is the verse itself. And we'll just ask Gora, because he's sitting right there, if he'd read this aloud. And again, if you don't use the microphone, you're bypassing the Brihat Madanga process.
Hello. A pure devotee always engages in the service of the Lord, taking shelter of his lotus feet. And therefore, he has a direct connection with the saffron mercy particles that are strewn over the lotus feet of the Lord. Although when a pure devotee speaks, the articulation of his voice may resemble the sound of this material sky, the voice is spiritually very powerful because it touches the particles of saffron dust on the lotus feet of the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 20th chapter, 25th verse, purport.
Thank you, Gora. Austerities of speech are very important to employ when one's a devotee, and especially in book distribution. And here they are: truthful, pleasing. Everyone say truthful, pleasing, beneficial, non-agitating, regularly reciting the Vedas. If you follow these, then you'll be empowered. Based on the principle of Atashri Krishna Madi, Nabhaved Grayamindri, Jivan Bukihisi. Seva Mukihi Jivado, Swayameva Spuratida. Seva begins with the tongue. And if you're careful about your speech, then that will translate into Krishna manifesting himself before you. And that's never a bad thing. Okay, so what's the most interesting topic to every living being? Correct. His or her own self. And as Dale Carnegie says, remember that a man's name is, to him, the sweetest and most important sound in any language. And this is where to spend your energy when you're communicating with people. Remember their names, and also remember to talk about them. There's a study that I read with this sociologist wrote a paper about communication. So he went around, he had an assistant that would be with him. He'd get on airplanes, buses, and things like that, and he'd just start up random conversations with people. And he'd make sure to only talk about the other person, not about himself. And then when he disengaged, his assistant, who would be somewhere nearby, would ask for an interview with the person. And inevitably, the person said, you know, that was the most fascinating person I ever met. And so you can remember that principle. What fascinates people is talking about them. And if you keep it on that subject matter, you'll actually notice that they're more inclined to speak to you. Shukadeva Goswami says, it is his own self that is most dear to every embodied living being. It is simply for the satisfaction of the self that the whole material creation of moving and non-moving entities exists. Therefore, you want to keep that in mind, because everyone's tuned into this radio station channel. And that is, what's in it for me? WIIFM. That's their station. So if you remember that when you're presenting, what's in it for them? When you're writing things, when you're making a copy and things, most people tell about themselves. And some of the marketing training books I've read, they said this is one of the big mistakes. Corporations all the time, they'll say, yeah, we have this many employees, this is what our building looks like, this, and nobody cares. They really only care about what you're going to do for them. How are you going to help take away the pain of their life or give them some happiness? So this is another really important point, and that is, assail philosophies, not people. And Prabhupada taught this to the devotees when they first came to India. And they started meeting all kinds of people who say, what do you think about Swami Bhojananandi? You know, like some famous Swami. And they say, what do you think about this one? Because their family's related with them or something like that. And so they asked Prabhupada, how should we deal with all these? And Prabhupada said, ask them, what is his philosophy? And then deal with the philosophy. Don't say, oh, no, we don't like that guy. You know, because immediately then you'll be shut out from their lives, because they have an emotion towards them. It's culture. Their mom liked them. Their dad liked them. So they're going to like them too. But so don't deal on that level. Always ask, what's the philosophy? And don't make cast personal aspersions on people. So here's the definition of a fanatic. Gaurav, could you read it out loud, please?
Fanatic. A person filled with excessive and single-minded zeal, especially for an extreme religious or political cause.
You deal with a lot of people through Facebook. Do you ever find anybody like this?
Too many,
okay. All right, so principle for dealing with fanatics, and this could help a lot. Here's the principle for dealing with fanatics. Don't. And I got this from a book written by a professor from New York, and the book is called How to Win an Argument, and it's all about the art of debate. And he talks about fanaticism and how you're not obligated to deal with fanatics. You can back down. But this one thing, don't deal with them. It can be very liberating, because oftentimes devotees feel like, oh, I have to defend this point. But you're not going to win. And also, a lot of people are going to lose because you're wasting your time trying to defend this one person against this one person who's not really interested. And we find this principle with Rupan Sanatan Goswami, when very avid debaters would come to town. They would just sign the sheet, say, okay, here, you won, bye, we're busy, see you later. So we can do that too. Here's some techniques. Become a master asker. Become a what? Yes, yeah, so as we talked about in one of the presentations, whoever's asking the questions is leading the conversation, because a question is a hook. It holds, it catches, it brings people back. And it's also a tennis racket. It reframes, it puts the ball back in their court, and it deflects. So a question is also a looking glass. It clarifies. Srila Prabhupada, woman reporter, why do you people shave your heads? Prabhupada, why do you shave your legs? So this is a principle of answering a question with a question. You put a question back to them. It's like, why do you people shave your heads? You may come up with some answer, but if you put it back to them, why do you shave your lips? Student guest, why are most of your followers young people? Srila Prabhupada, why are most university students young people? A question with a question, right? Student guest, because this is the age of education. Prabhupada, that is also the age of Krishna consciousness. So what you find here is sometimes people put a question to you that's a little bit abstract, or it's maybe you don't have a ready answer. So don't try to answer something that you can't answer. Otherwise, you'll end up flustered. So what do you do instead? You hit it back. How do you hit it back? Get out your tennis racket. That's a question mark. So somebody asks you, you know, are you a Hindu? It's like, what do you mean by Hindu? And there's also a generic question you can ask if you don't have a specific thing to ask them back, is say, how do you mean that? This is something Brian Tracy brings up a lot. He says, just ask them back again, how do you mean that? Everyone say. Yeah, anybody asks you a question, it's like, I don't like you anymore. It's like, how do you mean that? It's like, well, you never wash the dishes. No, I washed them last night. It's very difficult to answer something that is abstract, but if you keep asking the question until you get something that's specific, then you can deal with it. Professor, why do you give sannyas to young people? Prabhupada, what do you mean by young? Professor, silence. Prabhupada, young means about to die. Can you say that you are any older or younger than they are? Boom. When confused, answer a question with a question. Why do you ask? That's another one that you can ask. So there's a story of two guys walking down the street in New York. One's the New Yorker, one's from out of town. So this guy from out of town is asking his friend, the New Yorker, various things about the city, and the New Yorker keeps answering a question with a question. And after about 3 blocks, his friend turns to him and says, every time I ask you a question, you answer with another question. And why do you keep doing that? And the New Yorker turned to him and said, why do you ask? People respond to sincere compliments. This is true everywhere, even animals like this. If you talk to animals nicely, they're like, hey, he likes me. Like, come here, kitty, you're really nice. And there's like, and people, you know, if you appreciate that, if you offer sincere compliments, you appreciate something about them, then immediately they're like, wow, somebody finally noticed me. Because everyone's getting ready in the morning, they're dressing, except for that guy yesterday in his underwear. you have a Bhagavad Gita? Yes. Go ahead, please. I asked for reflection and I didn't give enough time, so please go ahead. Could you pass on the microphone, please, Gaurav? Thank you.
Yesterday you were mentioning that if devotees are sincere, then the genius in them comes out, and try to be sincere and try to encourage the devotees to be sincere, and then really everything good comes out. So that was very nice.
It's a principle. Yeah, and it's something Prabhupada taught specifically in response to how to train devotees. So it's a very powerful principle. Thanks for remembering that. Yes? Here comes the mic.
Hare Krishna. Prabhu, many times we get comments like, we don't have time to read, or, you know, we have our own literature that we read. So how do you...
So you honor the objection. So if someone says, I don't have time to read, then you say, oh, I can really appreciate that, because busy people are the most productive in the world. First you honor their objection. Don't say, no, you don't need time, blah, blah. Just they say, I'm really busy, I don't have time to read. They say, I can really appreciate that. You know, you're a busy person, and busy people get the most done in life, and are most productive and so forth, and say, but in any case, you don't have to read this book. So I say this all the time. People say, you know, I don't have time to read it. They say, oh, don't worry, you don't have to read it. This book is spiritual, and it's so powerful. If you just put it in your house, it'll attract good fortune into your house. And then I say, you know where good fortune comes from? And they're like, I'm not sure. And then I say, well, I'll tell you where it doesn't come from. It doesn't come from working harder. Because I know some people have 2 or 3 jobs and they still don't get ahead. So good fortune, I say, it comes from the spiritual level. So this book is a spiritual object, and every object in your life has an influence on you. I said, if you put a magnet next to iron filings, you'll notice that the filings are attracted to the magnet, right? They go, yeah. I said, in the same way, when you put this book in your house, it will attract good fortune into your life. And then they'll take it. Or they'll say, I don't believe it. And then I say, that's the best part, because even if you don't believe it, it still happens. So I was at the airport one day, some years ago, and this lady, she was just going to, you know, buy a ticket and get on a flight. And she walked by my booth, and I talked to her, and I told her the thing. And she was like, she had no idea what Bhagavad Gita was. She wasn't that interested. She wasn't, like, totally averse to it, but she was kind of like, meh. And so she said, well, you know, I won't read this. Why don't you? I said, you just put it in your house. Just carry it with you. It'll bring you good fortunes. So finally she goes, all right. You know, she gave me $5 and she walked away. And about a half hour later, All right, we'll take the book. So sometimes if you go out of your way to explain it, you know, why they, you know, in a kind of interesting way, then they'll take it. And sometimes people say, but why don't you give it to somebody else who will appreciate it more? And I say, that's a reasonable question, and I really appreciate it. And the reason that I wouldn't is because they've asked me to give them to the most intelligent people. And they'll say, oh, come on. It's like, no, I'm serious. And they go, all right, I'll take it. So first, honor. Honor it, because if you reject it, whatever you resist will persist. Okay, so who learned the template very well yesterday? Who feels like they were able to use it once? Yes? Okay, come on up here. Who else? Okay, two. Come on up here. All right, so... yeah, bring the mic. Okay, you come up too. Here's your book. And you present to Sri Vrindavan, okay? And then she'll present to you. So you can stand a little over here, right in front of the screen. And here's your mic. Actually, somebody could stand up and hold the mic for him so that he has his hands free, because he needs to put the book and be cool as a cucumber in an icebox.
Is it like a door-to-door situation?
Okay, you decide.
Hello.
Hi.
Okay. I'm here from a local yoga and meditation center, and I have a book to share with you. So this is to how to bring spirituality in your life, you know, become stress free.
I'm not stressing.